Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
You see us do that? It's just like we do it every day.
You laughed like we were the Three Stooges.
I love the Three Stooges. Who doesn't like the, exactly? Who doesn't like the Three Stooges? Every now and then you do meet people, and it's like, that's very telling.
Stupid.
Very telling. So,
so what's happening today?
Okay.
It's cloudy and hot.
We don't do weather, remember?
No, that's right. We don't do weather.
Weather's stupid. It's going to happen anyway. Bill got our guest today.
Yes, we have an excellent guest today. You're going to really enjoy him. Professor Brad Steiner.
You've already talked to him.
You've got his bio up on the site.
I do. I was going to make you do it, but...
Well, I'll let you read it because I don't have it up on my screen right now.
We got a little tardy. Our overlap between the other show and this show, we were goofing off.
Yeah, we were.
So let's see. So Bill knows more than I do on this, so it's fun. Bob will be a surprise. Bob, you get to make music for like hand-to-hand combat type stuff.
Well, there's tons of it out there.
Today the theme is combat type stuff. Self-defense?
I don't get to do more pot music.
No, that was last week. But I'm sure we'll have to deal with the stupid marijuana topic again, and we'll be able to provide you with that blast up back to the '60s for our music. We'll see what you can come up with today. Professor Steiner has written over 30 published books. He's the founder and grandmaster of American Combato, and that actually is the site AmericanCombato.com. And we heard him on Coast to Coast Radio one night.
Yeah, a few weeks down. And I was
stretched out, falling asleep, and it was like, hey, this is interesting.
Yeah, it was a great interview.
Yeah, Bill was just all over. He's like, we got to have this guy on. So he is the president and CEO of the International Combat Martial Arts Federation and an elite and prestigious organization of internationally recognized close combat, self-defense, and martial arts authorities. So we'll do more in the next one, so I don't just read this whole thing. But it's interesting. He's got really quite the history. Set up this type of, hold on, I don't speak martial arts, so I'm sorry, Professor, if I'm making this sound bad. But American Combato is one of the most recently developed formal martial arts systems. Professor Steiner founded it in 1975. And today he's internationally recognized and acknowledged as a 10th degree black belt and originator of the system. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious how you wind up inventing something like that, but we'll get to all that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Are you with us in there?
So, Professor, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. I didn't want to interrupt you. I wasn't aware that I was supposed to chime in yet.
I was like, anytime you want to help me out. Because, there are all these secret words.
Oh, there's just so much we could talk about with you. Can you give our listeners a little bit of your background?
I know. I didn't want to read it. It was too interesting from what Bill said.
You've done a lot of writing and teaching.
Yeah, I've been interested in and involved in the martial arts and cognate discipline since I was really in elementary school. I began formal training in the late 1950s at a school called Judo Incorporated, which it's long since been defunct, but it was an excellent school. It wasn't teaching what I wanted. I was always concerned exclusively with self-defense. And over the years, I studied jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, karate, kenpo karate, varmani, which is a Hindu version of jiu-jitsu. I took instruction with the late Charles Nelson, who is a Marine Corps instructor in World War II. One of my other instructors was a former FBI counterintelligence officer who had studied under William Fairbairn during the war. I had, for more than 25 years, a close association as a student and later as a colleague of the late Colonel Rex Applegate. Colonel Applegate was the chief instructor in charge of close combat training for the Office of Strategic Services under William Donovan. Later, he began work with CIA And I've trained New York City police officers. I've trained police officers from many different departments, city, state, and federal officers. I've trained people in the military, although I have not been in the military. Many people in special forces, for example, came to me for instruction on a private basis. And in that wise, I've trained a tremendous number of people over the years. I've been teaching for more than 50 years. I'm over 70, so I've been around the block a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I incorporate firearms, knives, sticks, tomahawk, assassination weapons, improvised weapons, with unarmed close combat. There is no sporting element to what I teach. There's no competitive element in it. It's strictly to keep people alive. And over the years, we've had some very nice successes, and that's always very gratifying.
So we're not gonna see your style in the MMA anytime soon, huh?
Well, the MMA is one version of sport. I'm not very enthusiastic about it, or the UFC. For people who are concerned about sport, I think one of the best approaches is to enroll for traditional Kodokan Judo, competitive karate, kickboxing, fencing, boxing, wrestling. I see the current fad of the MMA. It seems to me to be brawling. You can't use the techniques that you would use to save your life. And all they do is use skills that normally would be used with greater restraint, and they go all out, and there have been injuries and deaths, which I don't see any reason for. If you're going to get killed, at least get killed because it's unavoidable. Why get killed because you want to play a game?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd say 99% of the folks out there are probably never going to have the opportunity to be in a competitive combat sport. So I agree with you.
No, and you have to remember that is a young man's game.
Oh, absolutely.
You're not going to be slam-banging around when you're in your 40s, 50s, and beyond. But I teach self-defense as a lifetime endeavor. I don't really teach children as a rule, although I have made exceptions here and there when I know the parent to be very conscientious. My classes are all adult classes, and I've taught people. A psychiatrist who was the head of psychiatry at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Unfortunately, he passed away, but he was an older gentleman in his 70s, and he was a very good student for a number of years. This is for everybody. Anybody at any time may find that they need to take action to protect themselves or their families, and self-defense is a lifetime pursuit. The techniques that I teach can be done throughout your life. They're not limited to a time when you are as flexible as an Indian rubber man. they stay with you. They're retainable. And I think that's very important for self-defense. I have no quarrel with people who enjoy the sport or sports. That's fine. It's just not what we do. And the same thing goes for the classical, traditional types of martial arts. They're all wonderful. I studied a number of them myself. But they contain a good deal of antiquated material, much of which is very questionable, of very questionable value today. And so I changed it a great deal. I did study the World War II close combat methods of William Fairbairn and Eric Anthony Sykes, of Pat O'Neill, who trained the first Special Service Force, of William Fairbairn. As I said, he was a key figure in influencing me, Rex Applegate, and a number of other teachers whose training was oriented totally toward combat. That's what we do. Anybody who studies with me from day one is going to be taught, what do you do if one of these creeps in the street tries to lay a hand on you? And how do you defend yourself successfully? That's all we focus on.
The need for that, I'm sure, you know, in you're up in the Seattle area, can't be any different than everywhere else. I mean, we're just watching more and more aggressive criminal element on the streets. And people, I was looking through some of your stuff. You have quite a, you're a, also a hypnotherapist. Easy,
yes, I'm a
easy for me to say.
Right. I used a lot of the studies I did in hypnosis and mental conditioning in developing ways to mentally condition students of close combat and self-defense. And we place a very heavy emphasis upon that. My personal opinion is that mental conditioning is literally 90% of what you need when you're under attack. And the evidence I provide for that is the fact that there have been many people who have had no combat training per se, but whose attitudes led them to fight back very aggressively in any way they could and successfully in self-defense emergencies. That doesn't mean that techniques aren't important. They're critical, because if you have the right mindset and you've learned good techniques, you pretty much have a very, very good chance of coming out on top in any emergency situation where you have to defend yourself.
Sure, because that's a, we all know that that's a really big deal, and Americans are really pretty much terrible at that. We don't have that kill or be killed mindset. It just isn't something that most of us are raised with, and it isn't considered societally accepted.
Well, in the past, it was probably very rare that you would ever be in a situation where you would have to defend yourself.
But they always
out on the
say,
street, but
they always say, people know, and they ignore their instinct. I think rehoning that would be useful for everyone.
That decent human beings face, and this may sound surprising, but there's a lot of evidence for it. And this actually applies to law enforcement officers and people in the military as well. People don't really believe it can happen to them.
Right.
And the reason I say that, and there have been cases here in Seattle, one very notable many years ago, there was this freak who was going around in the office buildings downtown and attacking women in the elevators. Well, they got him, and he's history. But they interviewed a number of the women who had been attacked on television. I don't have a television today, but I did then. And to a person, each one said, "I couldn't believe it was real. I didn't believe it when he grabbed hold of me. It just didn't seem real." Now, I've heard this before from people in other situations, so it tells me that there's a disconnect between what people read in the newspapers about what is happening and an awareness that they, too, run the risk, not because they're doing anything wrong, but just because they're out there of being attacked.
And that
violence can come to anyone at any time, anywhere.
Right, exactly. And we've got to take a quick break, Professor, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about that. What happens to the human psyche when you're confronted with an emergency self-defense type situation? What do we, we talk about fight or flight, but what happens in that moment? Let's talk about that when we come back.
Sure.
All right, we're going to have a little celebration of capitalism here for 2 minutes. You can find us online, all the information about Professor Brad Steiner and his coursework. Some of it's available online, which is awesome if you're not in the Seattle or Prescott, Arizona area. And that is www.wethepeopleradio.com. How's that? .us. What am I saying? He's .com. We're U.S.
Did we get .com?
I was looking at Bill's face, and .com flew right out of my mouth. It was crazy. We'll be right back. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? you can't have too much Queen on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, well, we're here with Professor Brad Steiner, and we're talking about self-defense and
but actual self-defense, the part where you win and they
lose.
Yeah,
the real stuff, not the fake stuff. So we were talking about what happens when, you know, the average Joe's walking down the street and they're immediately confronted with either a violent person or some person that puts them in an immediate defensive situation. What happens in your head? I mean, because a lot of people say, "Well, gee, I'll just kick them," or "I'll just do." I think a lot of people just freeze up, don't they?
Well, it's some people I suppose do, but what you have to understand is that unlike any kind of sport or any kind of participation in anything that you are ready to do, there is a surprise. It's surprising when somebody attacks you.
Sure.
It's shocking. It doesn't really matter how skillful you are, but in order to overcome the degree of surprise that would be fatal, it's important that students be mentally conditioned so that they are anticipating not the certainty, but the possibility of trouble. Whenever you're out and about, you need situational awareness, you need to be paying attention, and you can't delude yourself into thinking that because you're a good guy, you're not doing anything foolish or stupid, it can't come to you. It can come to anybody at any time, and by having that level of awareness and by being a realist in that way, you adjust your mindset so that you're not, in any sense, paranoid. Paranoia is a mental aberration. We're not talking about mental aberrations. But you're alert. You're aware. You're paying attention so that, of course, you would be surprised if somebody attacked you. But that surprise will lead you, if you are properly trained, to have a reaction of, oh, I've got to deal with this. And I know what to do. I know how to deal with it. And when you have that reaction and you have the training in what to do, your chances of survival are very good. The average person who is not conditioned, who is not properly trained, tends to become so astonished that it gives the assailant an opportunity to just carry out whatever he's going to do.
Right.
And of course, what he's going to do is going to be harmful to the victim.
Right.
How long does it take you to get, somebody who really has never done anything like that, and I realize everybody's different, but just like your regular person who, you know, walks their dog and does that type of activity, you know, not somebody who's a marathon runner. Is it a huge learning curve?
I've been teaching for more than 50 years, and
you've seen them all.
I've never met an average person.
Yeah, I know.
Every single human being is different. Now, some people who have no background at all in violence learn very, very quickly. Other people, particularly those who have been attacked previously and who want it never to happen again, learn very quickly. But there's no way to say across the board, those people will learn quickly, those people will learn slowly. I don't always know, because they don't always communicate it to me, the full motive for a student's applying for instruction. Sometimes they'll tell me later on. Sometimes they're embarrassed. Sometimes they're afraid. And depending upon their motivation, which is entirely within them, they will learn quickly or they will learn slowly. But anybody can learn. This is not something that's limited to the occasional Rambo or this nonsense. We're not talking about you have to have any special attributes. You simply have to be aware that violence is a reality and willing to learn to do certain things that may be unpleasant, may be foreign to you. And if you are, you can learn pretty quickly. Some people take a little bit longer. And then again, I've had people over the years who have said to me, this stuff is very drastic, and it's just that's too much, and they'll leave.
Right.
It happens. I'm very familiar with violence. I'm very familiar with all aspects of armed and unarmed violence, and it is a serious problem. You can't deal with people the way it has been suggested you can by some commercial outlets that have a vested interest in teaching nonsense.
And so describe that more. What do you think people are what's the bill of goods that you think they're sold the most that is actually totally false?
Strength doesn't matter. As long as you learn a few tricks, you'll be able to handle anybody.
Interesting.
Myth one.
It doesn't matter if you're a female. It doesn't matter. Women can do anything a man can do. Now, women can certainly learn to defend themselves.
Right.
And once you get into firearms, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. But to suggest, as is popularly done to females, that, well, it doesn't matter if this guy is twice your size and much stronger than you are, you can handle him easily.
Yeah, that's totally stupid. Yeah.
And neither can a man who is outmatched that way. It's possible size and strength are not necessarily the decisive factors, but they are factors. There's no magic. A lot of people believe that there's some mysterious way you can learn how to handle anybody. And there's no mystery to it. You have to train. Once you're taught the proper techniques, the techniques that work, you have to work at those techniques. You have to develop them, make them your own. Whether you're learning with a weapon, whether you're learning the unarmed techniques, it's the same thing. You have to apply yourself. There's no magic. There's no quick fix. There's no two-day seminar that you can attend that will train you to handle anything.
Well, what you said earlier about some people, you know, feel that, oh, this is just too drastic. I'm not prepared for this, or I'm not willing to do this. I think what they're forgetting is, in a situation where you're being confronted by, you know, possibly getting a beating or mugged or whatever, the other guy is going to be very drastic. And
he's totally prepared for it.
And he's prepared, and he's going to do it. So you really don't have a choice.
Any self-defense emergency is drastic.
Exactly.
There is no nice way to defend yourself, and there's no nice attack.
Yeah.
Now, a murder can begin with a simple push or a wrist grab. And a person jamming a gun in your face may not even want to shoot you. He may just be trying to scare you. You can't evaluate that.
No.
Actually, that brings up a point that I think is very necessary, and I've been making this point over and over for years with incredible lack of success, that our legal system, however well-intentioned it may be, falls far short of rendering justice to the citizens of this country. Our legal system is based upon English common law. And English common law permits you to use that amount of force that is necessary to defend yourself and no more. The point is, many lethal attacks begin in an amateurish way, and you don't know there's lethal intent.
You don't know what's in their mind.
You have to assume when a stranger attacks you for no apparent reason, or for some ridiculous reason, like what you're wearing, the color of your skin, or any other nonsense reason, you may be confronting a murderer. Now, I don't think anyone can ratchet up quickly enough from a low-level, calm response to using appropriate force if someone's initial attack is gentle or relatively gentle, and really doesn't cause injury, and then it turns lethal. The guy grabs your wrist, and then he pulls a knife with his other hand, or he's got a gun in his other hand, or he pushes you, and then he comes in and tries to kick you. These things happen in the real world, and the real world demands that a human being who wants to be able to defend him or herself needs to be prepared for the extreme of violence. Normal human beings, if we know how to define normal, don't generate violence against anyone.
Yeah, good point.
I wouldn't raise my hand against anyone unless it was absolutely necessary. I don't want to hurt a person, and most normal people don't. But you can't learn to defend yourself without accepting that this may be necessary, and it may be necessary in the extreme. As I tell police officers that I train, if the bottom line in learning to use firearms, it's not pleasant. Nobody wants to hear this. But the truth is, the first thing that's necessary, you have to reconcile within your own psyche that you're willing to take a human life. If you're not, you'll hesitate, you won't pull the trigger, and maybe that which people always express a fear will happen might happen. The weapon will be taken away from you, and you'll be shot with it. So you have to, there's a changeover that has to occur with people when they learn self-defense. They can't be living in an atmosphere of fantasy or wishful thinking. And I admit, some things are very unpleasant to learn. For example, about a week or two ago, the New York Daily News Online is a wonderful source for information about what's going on attack-wise in the streets of the cities. This woman was walking along, and she passed this guy who was standing outside a van. Now, surveillance cameras picked this up. That's how I know it. They posted the pictures. He grabbed her, threw her in the van, and they drove away. The whole attack took maybe 2 seconds. Had that woman been properly trained, and my guess, I can't know this, but my guess is that when this guy grabbed her, she was thinking, oh my God, what's going on here? Why are you doing this? And in all of that time, of course, she was in the van and the driver had driven away. If she had been properly trained, and if she had been receptive to the development of the right mindset, the second that monster put his hands on her, she would have been ripping his eyes out of his head and kicking him. And he never would have been able to so easily throw her into that van, and she might be alive and well today. I don't know what's happened to her, but that's an example.
Right.
That's a very serious situation. I don't know when or where it may happen to any given person, but it certainly happens to someone all the time. And to be prepared for that, you have to have the right mental triggers in place. You have to have the right mental conditioning, the right mindset, as well as skills that will serve you. You can't expect to use pretty things. You're not going to look artistic in a self-defense emergency. The idea is to stay alive, to stop a would-be murderer or somebody who intends to beat you from doing so. A woman who's being harassed, she may be dealing with an idiot, or she may be dealing with a potential rapist.
So is
but
that
once
the...
this guy puts a hand on
there
her,
you go.
She should make a yo-yo out of him and cut the string.
So that's
that's
the point that changes the situation is once they put their hands on you.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely. I don't believe in in violence unless it's necessary, and it becomes necessary at that point.
Right.
And technically speaking, of course, they don't have to put their hands on you. For example, you're blocked off or surrounded by a few creeps who clearly make it evident they're intending to victimize you. You should take the initiative and attack. There are times when that happens. Somebody approaches you and says, hey, man, I want to talk to you, blocks your exit, pulls his jacket aside, shows you the butt of a pistol. Well, that guy's going to the hospital.
Right.
I'm not going to wait until he pulls the gun out and shoots me. Unless there's a badge next to that gun, he has a problem.
Right.
There are times when you do take the initiative and attack first. In fact, preempting attacks as you see them begin is part and parcel of what I teach. It's part and parcel of the system. It's what I do and what I teach because it's the fastest and most certain way of defending yourself. But the first principle of self-defense, the first rule that I follow is avoidance. If you can't avoid it, then preempt it when it begins. If you can't do that, Then you're taught what to do if, God forbid, you're taken by surprise, somebody grabs you from behind, you're jumped suddenly, and so on.
Gotcha. Yeah, because every situation is different, but I think the situational awareness part of it is something that, I mean, I see it every day. You know, you go to the grocery store and you see people, you know, pushing a cart and
playing on their phone.
Playing on their phone. That's the biggest one, is they're looking down. They're not even paying attention to where they're going. They're walking right up to some shady-looking people and not even thinking about what could happen by just their inattention to detail.
Right. People have become very reliant upon outside sources for their survival in more ways than one. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
but people, look at the way some people cross the street. They're just counting on cars to slow down.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in the crosswalk. It's like, hey,
welcome
to the real world.
Yeah, most people today are the product of the brainwashing and programming and nonsense and BS that's been handed to them about it takes a village and that other BS. By the way, I have to say one thing. When I unfortunately did not become aware of you and We the People until you contacted me, which I'm delighted that you did. I love your philosophy, and your orientation is in sync with my own. I just had to say that.
Because the other orientation doesn't work when we should eradicate it.
You have to rely on yourself for your own protection. The police do a great job when they can, but the police are a reactive force. And you can't have a cop for every person. This is ridiculous.
Well, it's kind of interesting. There's a guy that I see pretty regular, lives in another county, and he, in a meeting, he said, the police are not required to protect you.
And, that's true. I think that was determined many years ago by some genius sitting as a judge somewhere.
But I remember
hearing that many years ago.
People get mad about it. They're like, of course they are. And it's like, no, because if they were required...
The rationalization there is that they're not required to protect you personally as an individual.
Right.
They're required to protect society in general. Okay, fine. But I am responsible for protecting me.
Correct.
And those people who come to me want to be prepared to protect themselves because it's necessary for the very reason that the police can't do it. The police do a good job when they can.
Right,
today,
but there's not enough of them.
I feel sorry for the police.
Yeah.
They're out there, and as soon as they do anything proactive, notice how the brain-dead morons immediately bristle and come up with vicious rhetoric when a police officer uses force on somebody, but they're tolerant in the extreme when some damn monkey attacks somebody and beats them senseless for no reason.
Right.
Oh, they come to the aid of these freaks all the time. But when a professional law enforcement officer uses his hands or his weapons, oh, my God.
How dare
police
they?
Police brutality.
Right, yeah. Right.
Police brutality.
Police brutality, so we have to let all these guys burn our cities down. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. This is what you get. And it's important to remember also that the undercutting of confidence in law enforcement and the military is part and parcel of the communist strategy for taking over a country.
Yes. Yeah, and they've done a really good job with it, actually.
Yeah, thank God, not with everybody.
No, but they've talked a lot of people into thinking that that's a good idea. I see this stuff all the time. We had one down here near us, a guy who basically was the local heroin dealer whose son was 25, obviously on drugs, and was a complete mental case.
No one's perfect.
So here's the kid. You're right. Not all families don't work out well. So the dad is barricaded in a bedroom in his own home, and the son is trying to break the door down. So the dad is on the phone They have the 911 tape. It's really quite stunning. So the dad's on the phone telling the police, do whatever you have to do, break the front door down. He's going to kill me. You've got to save me. You know, this goes on and on and on. So the police finally get through the front door that's got the security thing. I mean, the place was like Fort Knox. So they finally get through the door. The son comes after the police. They wind up shooting him.
But he had a knife.
He had, he had some big shard off the door jamb, actually. He had like a big spear. And so he came at the police. They shot him in this tiny house. And the dad now is, making the rounds. Black Lives Matter. The police murdered my son. It's like.
Yeah, they murdered. Yeah, notice how loosely
what the heck?
Definitions go today.
It was
murder
just crazy.
Murder is defined by the law as unjustifiable homicide.
Right.
If ever there was a justifiable homicide, you just described it.
He showed up at a congressional town hall demanding that the congressman look into this corruption. It was like...
Well, a congressman? Well, what's a congressman? I mean, with the exception of someone like Ron Paul...
Right, but what are they going to do?
I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw the Eiffel Tower.
Well, at the end of the day, they have no jurisdiction because they are not in charge of local police. But it just was silly. They murdered my son, and then you listen to the 911 tape, and it's like... Okay, somebody here is not...
He senses a good lawsuit and suing.
Oh, you know
maybe
it.
Maybe he thinks he can get something out of it. You know, anybody who's involved in that damn drug trafficking or whatever, these are not normal people.
No.
These are psychopaths. These are self-serving scum who just want to cash in on the lowest and worst in human society.
Right, and there really is no place for them in a normal society, but we seem to make room for them.
Well, your state and our state, because did Washington legalize medical marijuana or recreational? I forget.
You know, honestly,
we legalized recreational. It's like what
question.
The heck?
I can't answer that question
recreational
with complete certainty, but I think both.
Bob's up
because
on his...
When we moved to Seattle, it was wonderful here. Every corner had a bookstore. Now every corner has a pot store where some pig is cashing in on the opportunity to sell drugs to people. It's just disgusting.
It's crazy.
Disgusting.
When I was a little kid, actually, we lived in Bothell when it was still all gravel roads and stuff. And it was like the Wild West. Not anymore.
Talk about the Wild West. I remember listening to an interview years ago with Louis L'Amour,
the great Western writer.
And he was asked by the interviewer, Louis, what happened when those bad guys rode into town and just shot up the whole place and terrorized everyone? What was that like? And Louis L'Amour laughed, and he said, that's TV. He said, any time these animals rode, he didn't use the term animals, that's just my terminology. Any time they rode into town, anybody ever tried that, everybody just grab his Winchester and shoot them out of the saddle.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's how you keep your town situated, I guess.
You see, the law in this country should be such that if you defend yourself, you're immune to prosecution. I don't care how. I don't care if you pick up a baseball bat and turn the bully's head into a flat disc. If you're defending yourself, you should be immune to prosecution. And we don't have that. Now you have to justify. You have to justify. Well, yes, you kicked him and you broke his leg. But did he really deserve that? Well, yes, he did really deserve that, as far as I know, because he was going to do terrible harm to me.
Right.
And I don't want someone stepping in after the fact and telling me, well, you know, you should have evaluated it more carefully. Yeah, let's see you evaluate something in a split second. This is the same problem that law enforcement
I was just going to say that's the police thing. You look at that in 2 weeks
of
analysis.
You go out in the street
and
enforce the law.
Yeah, nobody wants to do it.
And shut up and stop criticizing. They do the best they can do.
Right.
And it's amazing how well they do when you consider the insanity that's leveled against them.
Yeah, true. And the split-second timing of those things. We have to take a really quick break here before the top of the hour. We're chatting with Professor Brad Steiner. He is the inventor of American Combato. You can find out more about that at AmericanCombato.com. And all of his information is on our site, WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back. A Saturday Night Fever. Nice one, Bob. We have a different song planned. Hum a few bars for us, Bob. I see your frustration over there.
It was the right song. It just reverted back to the beginning of it for some reason. But
darn it. But, you know, the Saturday Night Fever was
you
fun.
You can blame Napster for that.
Napster, those darn Napster guys. Yes. So
we have Maria on the line.
We do have Maria on the line, and we're pushing up against the news break here at the top of the hour. So let's get Maria in because she's got a question for Professor Steiner. Hit it, Maria.
Okay.
It's all you.
Yes, I'm from Barcelona originally. And yesterday I met up with some German family. I just happened to meet for about 2 seconds. And I asked them what's going on. They say, oh, beautiful Barcelona. We go all the time. And I said, yeah, after what happened with the Muslims. And he says, oh, it's so sad. Yes, it's really sad. And I said, what happened to the man in your country? God loves everyone. And, you know, it leaves me stunned. Is that what part of what you're saying, the demoralization of people in general? And what do you have any solution for this Muslim situation?
Well, the solution, I don't know if anybody really cares about what I think, but if I were asked to have a solution presented for us to use, it would be to ban all of these individuals from every Western civilized country, and that's it. Hungary's
good.
Poland have a policy. They have forbid entry to all of these people, and they will not tolerate their presence there, and they don't have the problem.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, you know, this is not against our Constitution. We allow for religious freedom, but to claim that a murderous cult is equatable with Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism, or this is insane. When people behead people, when people burn down places of worship that other people believe in going to, this is lunacy. And the proper response to that is to not tolerate it, put an end to it, and prevent it from ever happening again.
And the end?
Again.
And the end would be the military throwing them all in a boat and send the boat out? And then,
I would object to that.
In the middle of the ocean? Oh, we don't know what happened to them.
Well,
Maria, you're
the
funny.
Boat is faulty, you know.
Well, I don't know. I'm, you know, full of ideas. But I don't think anybody'd want to listen to them.
Well, thank you.
It's absolutely amazing what's been going on. But I would call people's attention to the fact that it does seem to be a concerted effort, since it's happening in a multiplicity of countries. And that's very odd. It seems that the so-called leaders of so many countries are allowing this toxic garbage to come in and just destroy the very fabric of their society, and to threaten and to, and in some cases kill and murder, beat and rape their citizens.
No, you're,
so this is outrageous, and it shouldn't be tolerated.
It is outrageous. Thank you for your call.
Okay, thank
Maria.
You.
Thanks, Maria. I like your idea.
Okay.
By the way.
Bye-bye.
It's not completely off the wall. I think actually it would solve a lot of problems. It's kind of like in the old days when we actually put criminals in jail. That was an actual deterrent to crime, and now we just let everybody out. I don't know what they're doing up where you are, Professor, but at our end, everybody gets out all the time.
Them up and the courts let them out. It's just the same thing. Well, they're released on their own.
Well, here they passed.
We just decriminalized crime.
Yeah, we just decriminalized crime. Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it, Bob.
You just decriminalized what?
Yeah, crime. Crime. We made a lot of our drug crimes misdemeanors.
It's just not that bad. Just don't do it again. We'll give it another shot. Hey, we got a hard break here at the top of the hour. We'll be back after our news break. But maybe when we come back, let's talk about, we have a big senior citizen population in our area, and maybe we could talk a little bit about what they can do.
Boom. You can find out all sorts of information about Professor Steiner and his work at wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio for the second hour. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
So, Bill and I are over here on this side of the table. Bill found our guest for today. Bob's in charge of music. And guest today, I'm kind of on break. Oh, I did the website, actually. I did have something to do with this. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest today is Professor Brad Steiner. And I was going to read this other part. Okay, this is not a I love this part. This is not a conventional martial arts program. We teach the toughest and most effective methods of self-defense. Our training covers the finest war-proven techniques. Now, when you see war-proven, it's like, huh? War-proven techniques, tactics, and mental conditioning. Learn before you need it. When you're attacked, it's too late. And that leads nicely into David, who called during the break, who's a student of Dr. Steiner and had had some things to add. David, are you
welcome, David.
Hello. I'm really enjoying this show, and I called in when I found out it was going to be on. I just got in from Montana at 1 o'clock this morning, so I'm happy to hear this. But I've been a student of Professor Steiner for 30 years this summer, and I heard your comment just before the break about how this might work for senior citizens. I just want to mention that I'm 70 years old this summer, so I guess I qualify for that, but
just barely.
Studying with Professor Steiner really changed my life for the better.
Nice. What made you get involved in this?
Well, I came to him after, I think many of his students have over the years, after suffering a very serious experience. I was not injured, but I could have been killed by a knife attack in an Alaska grocery store. And this came after a decade of studying several different martial arts styles, going to Japan, spending the summer in what a style that seemed like street fighting in terms of being capable, and also competing in judo. And I found that in the event when I was attacked, I did not respond properly at all. Wasn't afraid, but I just didn't have the instant response, and I didn't have the good techniques. And I realized that everything that I had studied was completely inappropriate for real-life situations. It was only appropriate on the mat in a training competitive scenario.
Right, so you
How hard was it to convert over to the real life stuff?
It was not difficult at all, because I realized that I needed to compartment everything I had learned before to a certain area, which would be competition, and Professor Steiner does not denigrate that. He just simply says it's not appropriate for a situation where you're attacked on the street or in your home or something like this. It's an entirely different pursuit. And I realized that in order to actually do what I thought I was doing, I needed to completely reorient my thinking, which I did, and I ended up training with him all these years. And, for a number of years, I commuted 100 miles one way, so it wasn't like the dojo was just down the street. And even today, when I go to train, I don't get over very often, but when I do and I train at home, I drive about 60 or 70 miles one way through heavy traffic to be able to train with Professor Steiner.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Okay, so the $64,000 question. did you ever have to use it?
I'll tell you something. I have had several very, very close situations, and I was actually attacked by a pit bull about a week ago. I did have to use my walking stick technique and the attitude and the quick response. I was not injured. But I've had a number of situations over the years where I absolutely am certain, had I not had the training and had not had the awareness and the willingness to go all out if I was attacked, that I would probably have been seriously injured or killed. So just avoiding those situations where the outcome would have been highly uncertain placed me in a situation where I won the battle without having to fight it, because I'd already fought it in my training with Professor Steiner and didn't need to do it. But I knew that had things gone just one step further and they crossed that line, I would have responded with my training. And I know that the odds would be in my favor, not a guarantee, but highly in my favor compared to what I had studied before I began studying in 1987 with Professor Steiner.
So you didn't walk away feeling like you got lucky. You walked away feeling like, whew, good thing I had prepared for this. Yeah,
exactly.
That's awesome.
That's good. Well, thank you for that story. That just kind of goes to prove what we've been talking about, that nothing being real life prepared,
you know?
Yeah, being prepared is and the mental.
I'd like to say Dave has just distinguished himself over the years as one of the best students imaginable. One of the requirements for black belt first degree is the production of a thesis. The student chooses the subject. And Dave wrote a treatment covering all aspects of this system, discussing it, and he shows just an incredible understanding of everything I teach. It was one of the best theses I ever had the privilege of reading. He is a former teacher himself, a school teacher, and I would say he's one of the more prominent people in the precious metals field.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know if he'll ever need to use anything he's learned. I certainly hope he doesn't, but I consider myself very lucky to have him as a student to this day.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, I was also reading on your site that for the folks that can't travel, like David was saying, he was driving 100
miles. Excuse me, but I'm having a little bit of a problem hearing you.
That happens when we have two people on the phone at the same time. Actually, why don't we let David add whatever he would like, and then we'll...
Sure.
Okay, I will just briefly add something and then hang up so that you can hear better.
No sweat.
I'm very honored for what Professor Steiner has stated, and I would just say this. To this day, I feel an obligation to the system that he created and to Professor Steiner personally to be absolutely certain as far as I can, humanely possible, if and when I need to respond, that it will be absolutely the legal standpoint and the fact that I couldn't avoid it. And the old saying, I want to avoid both the 6-carry and the 12-carry. And so that is my goal as I continue to train to be able to do that. And thank you for having me on, and I'll jump off so Professor Steiner can continue.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks a million, David.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
What I was saying was you have the ability to train folks via DVD course,
right.
So they don't actually have to go to your location in Seattle or Phoenix.
Many, many people throughout the world who have used the DVDs and are using them now. In fact, I've been asked not to mention what he's doing specifically, but there's an instructor in Europe who is presently using this to teach others. He's an instructor, and he's using that course. So, yeah, it's very easy to learn from those DVDs. The material was not done as a demonstration to show off. It was prepared to show you step by step how to do everything, so it's slow enough and clear enough, and there's enough explanations. So you can learn from the DVDs very well.
That's awesome.
I certainly recommend it to anybody who can't get to take personal instruction, because they'll learn every bit as well if they pay attention to what's being taught.
And so, we have a link for that on the web page too.
Yeah.
I saw that and I thought, okay, kind of at first I was looking and I thought, okay, one One of your places is in Seattle, Washington. The other one's in Prescott, Arizona. I thought, drats, what about everyone else? And we have all these people around the world.
Well, you know, the Prescott
location
bears mentioning. It's run by Mark Bryans, who is the top student I've ever had in all of the teaching I've ever done. And for those who are interested in that area particularly, Mark is offering a combat shooting program at a private facility. So he's teaching combat handgun. I teach that too, but he's setting up a special course which people who are not regular students can take. And he's very knowledgeable. He's very accomplished. And it's an excellent program. I've had people come here to take intensive private lessons, and they've done very well. But for somebody who wants to learn this, the DVDs include an awful lot of material, and I'd recommend them to anybody. You had asked earlier about the elderly. Well, I'm elderly. I'm over 70.
Well, I'm 55. And, Bill's 61, so I guess we're elderly too.
Well, I train every day, either weight training or martial arts, and I don't feel terribly different than I did when I was in high school, but I'm not hallucinatory, so I don't believe that I haven't changed, and I know I can't do at 70 what I was able to do at 30 or 20. But as I said, this system is for everybody. And certainly a person who is in a number one condition and 25 years old and who has studied for 2 years or 3 years is going to be tremendously effective. He will have advantages that an 80-year-old individual would not have. But it's important to remember, someone who is a senior citizen has the element of surprise twice compounded. The sewer rats that attack elderly or children or women, these scum anticipate an easy success. They carefully pick their victims. And when you have, when you attack somebody who's 80 years old and you think he's an easy roll and you end up blind or with a broken leg or unable to breathe lying on the sidewalk, you realize you made a mistake.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that's and I think that's a big deal, too, because criminals do target an easy target. And they're
It's disgraceful.
They're not going to attack somebody who's, you know, looks like they've been working out and in good shape and they're keeping an eye on things.
Look at the Bernhard Goetz incident I believe it was 1982.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Absolutely outrageous. He was sent to prison, and I'm from New York City. I'm from the Bronx. I grew up there. I've lived there for more than 30 years. I loved New York when it was a city. Now, I don't know what you want to call it. But
kind of a free-for-all.
When you consider you've got these maggots coming at you with screwdrivers, the only thing that he did wrong, he did two things wrong. His marksmanship could have been better. He should have used a heavier caliber weapon and made sure that all of those things were finished. And he never should have given himself up because he didn't do anything wrong. He defended himself.
And he was on, for the people who, we have a large percentage of our audience that are in Ukraine. Hi, Ukrainians, and other countries around the world. For those folks that don't know about Bernhard Goetz, give them a little snapshot of what the incident
was. Sure. Bernhard Goetz was a physically diminutive, peaceful guy, no criminal record. He, I believe he worked on computers or he did some sort of work involving technology. And I believe he was attacked previously. If I'm not mistaken, and I may be, it was in Florida. And before coming back to New York City, he purchased a handgun. because he, for obvious reasons, he didn't want to be attacked again. And anybody who has a problem understanding that really needs help. And he was assaulted on the subway by this collection of maggots, three or four just useless pieces of slime, who came at him with screwdrivers in their hands. And he shot them. And
I think he shot all of them, didn't he?
Oh, he got all of them, yeah. Just should have kept his mouth shut because he didn't do anything wrong. He may have done something that was like in law school, they call it malum prohibitum. It's wrong because the law says it's wrong, but it wasn't malum in se, which is evil in and of itself, which is what the animals did when they attacked him.
Right.
And in a sane society, only that which is malum in se becomes malum prohibitum. And we're on our heads. We're backwards now. We're completely backwards. We're terribly concerned about ridiculous things, and we're not concerned enough about the serious problem of human predation. It's epidemic. All of these lies about violent crime is down in New York City. For whom?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
For whom is it down? Every day there is a more horrific tale of lunacy and violence being directed against some poor person, and where is it down?
Can you walk in Central Park at night in New York?
I don't think you're permitted to go into Central Park legally at night.
That's just ridiculous.
I mean, believe there's a law against it today. When I was a boy growing up in New York, people could sleep in the park overnight.
Yeah.
Now the parks are death traps.
Wow.
Well, that should be cleaned up.
Yeah.
Now there's nothing at all that an individual can do to correct a societal problem. But the individual can correct the problem for himself and for his family. And that's where the solution lies. People need to take hold of responsibility for their own protection, because it would only take a few attempts to victimize people where the victimizers ended up dead on the sidewalk or crippled beyond help on the sidewalk, for these animals to get the idea maybe it isn't so safe to go out there and target people.
We're closed for business, huh? We've got to take a really quick break here. We're going to come right back with Professor Brad Steiner, the inventor of American Combato. You can find all that information on our site, wethepeopleradio.us. And
we'll be back.
Viva la capitalism, huh?
Yep.
A little break and tell them how much we appreciate them. There are self-defense songs.
Yes.
Who knew?
It was Journey.
Really?
Really.
From how long ago?
2005.
Oh, like, that's why.
Post-Steve Perry.
I stopped listening to Journey in what, after 1970, I didn't really upgrade my music very much. I kind of stopped right about there.
So, Professor, we're talking about senior citizens and their ability to incorporate your your information. What are some of the things they can do to protect themselves when they're out, you know, minding their own business?
Well, very, very definitely, the learning basic unarmed self-defense is important, and having a legally owned firearm, which you know how to use. And I don't recommend that anybody just go out and buy a gun, but I do recommend that they take a class in handling and safety and get an opportunity to select the type of weapon that suits them best and to carry it legally if they can get a permit, or at least maybe keep one in the home. I don't know what the laws are where everybody is. I certainly, for example, would recommend if a person is frail and elderly, a .22 rimfire semi-automatic pistol. That's manageable by virtually anybody, and it's a very potent weapon for home protection. I think a walking stick is a very good weapon. Of course, I teach that, and this is something that I'm not aware of any location where anyone would be prevented from carrying a walking stick, least of all people who are senior citizens. I can't imagine it. A knife is a good weapon, but not everybody has the mindset to use a knife. It's one thing to learn the techniques, which are easily learned by anyone, but it's another to be willing to get blood on your face and your hands and your clothing and actually get in close to somebody and eviscerate them. It sounds like you can learn it because it's easy, but you need the attitude. And if you have the attitude, I'd recommend a legal knife, a knife that's of legal size. Dogs are a very good aid to self-defense. And aside from being wonderful companions, I've loved dogs all my life.
Dogs
and,
are awesome.
A person walking with a Doberman Pinscher, I don't care how frail they look, I doubt they're going to be bothered.
Right.
German Shepherds, Doberman Pinschers, Rhodesian Ridgebacks, Rottweilers, these types of dogs have a deterrent effect just by their mere presence. And for home dogs, you can have an alarm dog, just a little dog that'll bark. It could deter someone from trying to break into your home.
Well, I think they did a study here not too awful long ago. They questioned criminals about that were, you know, convicted of breaking into homes, and they said one of the biggest deterrents for them was a small dog. They make a lot of noise. They are fast. They most likely will bite you before a big dog will, and they just avoid them. They just go pick an easier target. And I was surprised by that.
Well, I'm excited since our dogs are little.
I would rather have a 95-pound Doberman who was aggressive.
Yeah.
I think you break into somebody's home, I think it's fitting that you become the dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, if they break
you know,
in, yeah,
I
that's...
I have no sympathy for violent offenders at all. I don't draw the line at anything that should be done to them. They're not human. They make life terrifying and miserable for many people. There are some people who lose their lives because of them. There are many times, and I've heard of this before, women who have been assaulted and raped, their whole life is destroyed. They'll put on a great deal of weight because they don't want men to come near them. All of this garbage because we don't have the backbone to just get rid of these violent scum. And it doesn't look like it's going to change because it's getting worse and worse as the days go by. So people need to take responsibility themselves. Now, elderly people have recourse just like younger people, but they do need to remember, of course, that there is no doubt if you are on in years and you haven't developed over the years a good deal of self-defense ability, you are working at a reduced capacity. A 19-year-old punk has advantages over an 86-year-old woman, and it's silly to pretend not.
Right.
But if that 86-year-old woman can open up his carotid artery with a utility knife, or put three or four slugs in them, that evens it out.
Yeah. At that point, the high heels are effective once he's got some holes in him.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of things they can do. We are fortunate in our community that we have a sheriff that is
very
respectful of the Second Amendment, yep. and we can apply and get a concealed carry permit. A lot of communities don't. A lot of, I mean,
you have to have
absolutely.
A lot
and
of them
it's unconstitutional.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah,
period. It's against the law.
Yeah, they let you keep one in your house, but you can't take it out of the home.
It's
well,
not up
that's just
to anybody
ridiculous.
To let you do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
The law of the land provides for the protection of your right. It doesn't give you the right. It provides you for protection of your right to keep and bear arms.
No.
You have the right. It's the law itself that prevents it that is wrong. Your rights are unalienable. They are recognized by our Constitution. They're not given you by our Constitution.
Correct. And it's always interesting to me that most people don't realize when they elect a sheriff, they don't vet that part, their Second Amendment right. They don't realize how much a sheriff can actually stand up for your rights, even when other parts of maybe your state government are kind of losing their mind. Like here in California.
Yes, of course, it's true. You're very fortunate, and there are many good law enforcers. They're not the problem.
No,
the problem are the brain deads and the mannequins that write and pass these laws.
Well, in our particular state, I don't know how you guys are situated, but we have things that go to the ballot that come from the voters. Which seems like a good idea until they come up with the Safe Schools and Streets Act or whatever it was, which was really just decriminalizing crime. And then we had the other one. The governor actually pulled that off with the legislature, the Assembly Bill 109, where they let out tons of criminals.
Violent
just
criminals.
Tons of criminals.
Well, one of the reasons why Seattle remains, and it's a beautiful city. I love Seattle. One of the reasons why it remains a relatively safe big city is because of the gun laws. It's a shall-issue state as far as concealed carry is concerned.
Nice.
And these sewer rats have no knowledge for sure if the person they decide to go after is going to react with a firearm. They don't know it. And that, of course, is very good. That's as it should be.
Yeah,
But very
the
often,
unknown.
too, it's the fact that a person is conditioned and brainwashed to really see it the way of the socialists, that, well, guns don't belong in the hands of the private citizen. That's the whole problem. You see, if we could just get rid of guns, the problem would be gone. And there are too many people who should know better who don't know better. They drank the Kool-Aid. And they believe this garbage, they believe this drivel, and they vomit it out every time they're asked for their opinion. And that's unfortunate, because we've got a lot of citizens in this country, and if every single one said, go to hell with your laws, I want to be protected, I want my family protected, and I'm going to avail myself of what the Constitution provides, we wouldn't have as serious a problem as we have.
No, and it's unfortunate that there are so many people that actually, you know, are still using the phraseology that guns kill people. It's like, they leap right up off the table, they jump right out of their locked cases.
Well, how often do you hear someone say, it went off?
Right.
The gun went off. Really?
There was no finger involved?
That's a talented gun. Where did you get that particular gun? Well, you know, people have learned to just distance themselves from responsibility. They don't want responsibility for their own protection. They don't want to think for themselves. They don't want to take care of themselves. They want somebody to jump in and protect them. And, well, we have the police. And, again, I have nothing but respect for the police. But theirs is a reactive role. You have to take responsibility for your own self-defense. And part of that is firearms. Part of that is being able to use your hands and feet. Part of that is mindset. Part of that is being able to use other weapons. Part of that is home security with alarms and dogs and fences. And it's an intricate combination of many factors that goes into total self-defense. And too many people are not even concerned about it.
No, you're right.
They don't think it'll happen to them. Or they don't think it's their responsibility to deal with it if it does. Call the police.
Right.
I agree. If you can, if you have time, absolutely. I would much rather the police handle the situation. I don't want to handle it. Please, handle it for me. Call the police. But it takes a while for them to get there. And one thing you can be certain of, if you're ever attacked, you'll be there. Right away.
Yes.
The victim is always present, and it's too late to learn what to do once you're attacked. There's no time now. Now it's you either can do something or you can't.
Right. And so much of what you're saying is spot on. A lot of it is just self-awareness and being, don't put yourself in a situation where you can be taken advantage of or you can be assaulted. I mean, people do things that they're asking to get victimized.
I agree with you. Yeah. I always tell my students, speak to strangers as though you were talking to a sensitive six-year-old, because today people get offended at nonsense, at nothing.
True.
The way you look at them. And you try to avoid that. If you're driving, one of my students, this happened years ago, just shows you the idiocy of some people. It's a police officer, Seattle police officer, and my student was holding some suspect at gunpoint. And this moron walked up to him, stepped in front of him, and says, "What's going on here?" This was an adult.
Yeah.
And my student handled it very courteously. He said, "Sir, please step aside." I couldn't have that kind of control. I mean, I think at some point you reach a point of idiocy where there's no response possible. That's just amazing. If you're driving down the street, you see police lights flashing, take a turnoff. Don't drive into the. Oh, you want to see what's going on? You know, bullets don't know where they're going.
Yeah, I see that all the time too.
Yeah, if you're in a store and there's somebody comes in who's very rowdy, well, leave. You have a right to stand your ground, but it's a right that you should pick to apply only exceptionally. Most of the time, it's far better to just say, "Well, I'm out of here," and leave. Just try to avoid trouble. It's not that difficult. It does. It's no guarantee that you will avoid trouble, but it's a guarantee that you'll find trouble almost certainly if you don't try to avoid it. Because there are a lot of people out there just looking for an excuse to get violent. Their people today are not in control of their impulses as they used to be. I mean, if you go back to the 1950s, even the early 1960s, you didn't have this utter lack of self-control, this abrasiveness in people, this jumping to conclusions by people about, "Oh, he insulted me," or
"I'm offended." I'm offended.
My dad.
Offended by what?
Yeah.
Because the person doesn't agree with you?
Yeah. My dad always called them the weak sisters.
You're dealing with children now.
Well, you know, a classic example of that is, I mean, look what's happening South Carolina or whatever, Charlottesville.
Yeah.
You know,
Charlottesville.
I have no problem with people protesting or going out and voicing their opinion on something, but when you get to a situation like that and you see the battle lines are forming up, people are showing up with helmets and clubs.
Oh, and masks. I like the masks. Yeah.
What the heck?
That would be a warning, wouldn't you?
Yeah, wouldn't you think maybe that's not a good place to be and maybe you ought to just leave the area? But no, they all stand around and then they get beat up or the police
give them a wood shampoo or whatever it is because they were there. And they could have very well been innocent, but they were there. Yeah, they didn't need to be there at that point. It's time to go. When that stuff starts, I mean, you're putting yourself in a situation to...
And a good deal of protecting yourself is the exercise of common sense and what you do and how you speak with people, how you interface with people.
Right.
You can sometimes tell when you're dealing with someone, is this person trying to be difficult or not? Well, if he is, don't you try to be more difficult. Beg off.
No.
Disengage.
Yeah.
Walk away.
Walk away.
Yeah.
Be done with it. Be done with it. There's nothing to be gained from violence except self-defense when necessary. But only an idiot gets personal satisfaction out of physically injuring somebody. This is the hallmark of the out-of-control idiot. Violence should be avoided whenever possible. Situations that suggest they might turn violent should be avoided, and very often they can be. Self-defense is for when you cannot avoid it, when you've done everything you can. I always tell this to people because properly many people are concerned about the law and self-defense. Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I can't give anyone any legal advice. But my personal advice to everyone is that they do everything humanly possible, short of increasing the risk to themselves or their families, to avoid trouble. Just don't contribute anything to the buildup of hostilities. So long as it hasn't become physical, keep trying to disengage. Keep trying to get out of that situation. Avoid it. And if you do that, you're not guaranteed of not getting involved in a situation that's legal, but it's very unlikely. See, the thing with the law, too, what I would suggest is that people not be concerned so much about winning their court case. They should be concerned about being unindictable, so that when the police do make a report, when the police do show up, the situation is such that their reports, which are submitted to the district attorney's office, cause the lawyer who's looking at it to say, oh, well, this is self-defense. There's no case here.
Let's talk
That's
about that a little bit more. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's talk about that a little bit more. Because
sure.
we watch, I mean, let's face it, all the crimes that we, most of us, deal with are on, you know, some TV show that wraps up in an hour. It's not like we...
Yeah, and 20 people get shot during the course of it.
Exactly.
There's no,
and the
there's no administrative leave. The
no.
guys just go right on to keep shooting people.
That's right. And the DNA is done in, you know, a phone call. They make a phone call, boom, DNA.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit more, because that is part of something that we have to consider these days. We're at the point here where there's a ton more information, and we know we're running out of time, but we will have Professor Steiner back on with us, and
I look forward
we
to
promise
that
not to short everybody on the info. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
No matter what I do, I can't make you happy. Though I go to great lengths to do your will. If you say hurry, girl, I make it snappy. Trying hard to keep your wishes filled. But I'm getting tired and feeling real discouraged from being pressured underneath your thumb. So here's a message you can give your mama. Starting now, I'm looking out for number one.
Hustling people strange to you. Even if you do got a two-piece custom, they fool you. Hey, you don't
tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull the mask off a Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Slim.
We're talking to the guy who trained Slim.
That's That's right.
This is and I go back. I go back to the other part. You know, this is not a conventional martial arts program. They teach the toughest and most effective methods of self-defense. Training covers the finest war-proven techniques, tactics, and mental conditioning. That's really hard to say. I'm going to make Bill say it next time because it's just too hard for me.
My whole body's a weapon.
you go, Barney, one bullet. Learn before you need it. When you're attacked, it's too late, and that's just totally true. So for all those people who think that this, you know, isn't something they can use, what are the secondary benefits?
I'm sorry?
What are the, you know, like let's say somebody isn't particularly, they might live in an area where they feel like, you know, crime really isn't that big of a deal. Let's do a little shameless promoting here at the end of the program.
Well, I don't believe that that's an accurate way to view any human community. There are certainly neighborhoods. I used to teach in the South Bronx. I have a genuine scar from a knife wound from being there. But most of the people that I met in the South Bronx were very nice people. I saw, at that time, the Savage Skulls and the Nomads were the two gangs that dominated the area. But aside from that one instance, I was never bothered there. On the other hand, you can go to a very nice neighborhood and get jumped and shot or stabbed. People who believe they live in a nice place are probably correct, but that doesn't stop a punk with a bus pass or a car or a bicycle from intruding upon that nice place and victimizing people there. The Sharon Tate Party lived in a wonderful place. They were murdered by people who lived in cardboard boxes under the guidance of that freak who, for some reason or other, has been kept alive in prison, Charles Manson.
I think the important thing,
people need to understand that they can learn to defend themselves, that they're not helpless, and they should not embrace helplessness as the powers that be encourage them to do. For heaven's sake, you reach a point like they have in England where you have a special unit of the police that carries guns. They are the special guys, and you call them when there's an insurmountable problem for the unarmed. What nonsense is this?
Yeah. Well, how'd you like to be a policeman there?
Magical instruments or something?
You can't trust the all
the
police.
The citizen needs to be prepared to defend himself with his hands and feet, with a weapon, with anything at hand, just like he always has been. This used to be a tradition in America. You were self-reliant. Not that you didn't use the law whenever possible to settle matters. Of course you do. But when violent criminals interfere, whether they're bullies or terrorists or robbers or home invaders or carjackers or rapists or gang members, whenever, you've got to stop them. Nobody else can do it. And you have to be prepared to do that. And it does take learning things that are unusual and that most people don't know, but they need to know it. It should be part of your education. Mm-hmm. If you live in a major city, it's almost a requirement for living there, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if you intend to go, I mean, where you live, where your house is, those aren't the only places we go.
Yeah.
You know, like where our house is pretty good. My office, that's another story.
Well, I live in a nice neighborhood. I like the people around here. They're very nice. So what?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do. I don't stay here 100% of the time.
Exactly.
And besides which, there is nothing preventing. Oh, here, let me give you this information. Our next door neighbor is in prison for murder.
Oh, whoops.
If you go to YouTube, go on student. All you have to enter is student of murder, and you get the whole story about. He was our next door neighbor. Nope. And that was very, very unusual. I mean, I was not close to this guy, but never expected it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know.
Things happen.
Yeah, you don't know.
There's no nice... People vary in the way they present themselves. Some people may present themselves and appear to be very troublesome, but they're really very nice. They may appear to be gruff, and then you find out, well, they're really sweethearts.
Sure.
And then there are other people who have such a polished presentation, like some damn political figure, some some louse who makes his... instead of making a living, he just lives off of the rest of us, and he enjoys the fruits of other people's labor. And he's got such a polished presentation. Everybody's convinced he's everybody's friend. He's
perfect.
No one's friend. He's looking out for himself.
Well, tell
and
me.
And anybody with half a brain knows it.
Tell me this. Give us the things that are available. Just let's do a little promoting here in the last 5 minutes.
Okay, sure,
What's available for people if they don't live in Seattle?
I offer regular classes 6 times a week in self-defense, the system, the American Combatto System. I offer private lessons. I offer private lessons and intensive courses to people who come here from other countries or other cities. And there's the DVD course, which is really comprehensive. I can't recommend it strongly enough to people who just want to train at home. It's possible. I do say they have to put in 30 minutes a day at least to train. It's not just watching it. You have to do something. I offer self-hypnosis programs, 20 of them, that assist a person in overcoming mental blocks or in learning the proper combative mindset for self-defense and close combat. And there are hundreds and hundreds of articles on Seattle Combatives, which is one word and one website that I have. And all the articles there are free. There's new postings every month. There's a newsletter on AmericanCombatto.com, free every month. People find it helpful. People enjoy the presentations. And past radio interviews that I've done and that Mark Bryans, my black belt, has done are available on PrescottCombatives.com. We've got tons of material out there, and there's virtually, for anybody who really wants to learn, the opportunity to learn self-defense. And it's not something you have to involve yourself with acrobatics. You don't have to worry about getting involved in competition where you are going to get injured from time to time, and there'll be a shelf life to the system where once you get into your late 20s, it's no good anymore. This is for everybody. Everybody and anybody who wants to be able to defend themselves. Any adults.
Tell me about the self-hypnosis or that whole list. Should they do them in order?
I'm a licensed hypnotherapist, and I've licensed since 1987, but I was using it for years before then. I've studied the psychology of violence in depth for many years. And what I've done is set up programs that people can use to overcome certain things they feel they need to overcome or instill certain things. For example, the first self-hypnosis program is Fear into Fury. That's the title of it. And what I'm concerned to do there is first place the subject in the trance state, which is totally safe. There's no danger in hypnosis. And program them so that as they feel that fear response coming on, they are able to convert it to rage and generate the indignation and hostility needed to fuel their skills and to protect themselves. As I said before, there's no nice way to defend yourself. It just doesn't exist. And when you are embroiled in a situation not of your choosing, where you have no choice but to use force, you want to be able to use it as quickly as possible, as well as possible, and as decisively as possible. The self-hypnosis courses help people do that.
Well, I think that's awesome, and there's a tremendous amount still to be learned. Please keep us on your radar as things come up. And
yeah, we could go on and on and on. We'd love to have you back, Professor.
I would love nothing better than to be back. I'd like to be on your show every week if it was possible. Because there's plenty to go over.
See, there's lots of information.
This is a major problem.
It is, and we're going to order the course and do it so we're smarter and safer, and then we can tell you how big of knuckleheads we are.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. We're out of time, and we'll stay in touch.
I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Fantastic. This has been We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.